Welcome, everybody. I hope you notice the welcome that was on your seats and on the window. It meant, in every sense of the word, in every sense of its real meaning, too. Because, woman, you are lovely. And I think we forgot it a long time ago. This coming together is really about sharing. I'm just sharing. Sharing something that is, I think, needs to be shared. I've written it all down, so I'll read it to you. One of the reasons is that English is my second language, and it's much easier for me to read what I'm writing. And the second reason is that I'll reveal it in a minute. And before I begin, I would like to explain the presence of those melons under the table. Whoever didn't notice them, there are 5 melons under the table. And the reason why I felt to share the melons, first it just came, I wanted to bring something from the earth, just came to me, melons. But there's a story behind it. When we first came to America, we traveled all over America to see where we're going to live. And we went to the Anansi Native Americans. When we came there to visit, we were on this plateau, the ancient plateau, they are the Hopis. We were taken by a guide who belonged to the Hopis, because they don't allow you just to come freely. We came and they happened to do ceremonies there, sacred dances, as we just came. And there were about just 3 of us outsider beside the native people. And there was the women dance, only women dancing. And it tend to be that the women dancing was to do with, they call it mocking the men. And mocking the men is if the men don't know what they know. And in the middle of that, they do it like the Sufi do, which was surprised me. They put all the food in the middle, and it's blessed by the fact that they do the ceremony, and then they share it all among the people as a blessed food after the ceremony has been taken and the dance has taken place. And so we watched it, and I stood apart, because I didn't feel it want to intrude in any way, and I just stood completely apart, and I really deliberately. And they were so poor, and they had so little there. They had some cupcakes and some crackers and some fruit. And one of the women came and ran after me, and she gave me this melon. It was such a blessing for me of arriving to the country here by the people who are really somewhere the guardians of this land in the unconscious. And the feminine aspect that is still relating to the earth and the whole that within her. So I had to eat the melon, of course, because I couldn't keep it forever, but I kept the seeds in my purse and all the time until we found a place to live in Point Reyes Station, and that's where I put it in the garden. So I just thought this melon has a story of the feminine, a story of way of being in the earth in a sacred manner. And I thought, well, then we can all share it at lunchtime. So welcome again, all of you. 100 years ago, a great Sufi teacher, Hazrat Inayat Khan, said, "I can see as clear as the daylight that the hour is coming when women will lead humanity to a higher consciousness and higher evolution." This was written between 1914 and 1918. 50 years ago, the great metaphysical English painter and writer Cecil Collins, who I was so fortunate to have as a teacher, said, "We have denied the spirit of the earth, and that spirit of the earth has to appear in woman. The meeting of the spirit of the earth and the spirit of the other world is one of the great moments, I believe, will come in the future history of culture." My teacher, who passed away 11 years ago and was a great Sufi woman and a great lover of God, said to me just before her passing, she said, "Anati, the women are coming back." So this gathering here, this sharing, is really about a calling to remember. It is a need. This is a return. It's about love. It's about remembrance. Why is it a return? And what is it called to be remembered? You have all responded to this call, otherwise you will not come here today, because you know it in the depth of your being, in your blood, in your soul, and in your heart. So woman, you have to remember who you are. And the great mystery is that by remembering who you are, all else is connected with such remembrance. It is life calling to life, sacred matter to sacred matter. Spirit and matter, once again, are not split. As I was preparing for our gathering, I was wondering, how shall I start the gathering, or what it is that I am drawn to share? What language, what images would be the most appropriate use? And just by using the word drawn, I immediately noticed that it indicates depth, as one draw water from a well or draw one's breath. There are immediate connection to life-affirming images and reality. So, what is the language that is calling us to use, especially in this time? And what images are calling us at this time from the depth of this moment, which are from always and from the always, which is always new? And I have found myself naturally drawn to these images. What is sacred space? Then came earth, water, naturally followed by the word reflection, inner listening, receptivity, longing, vessel, soul. So I reflected upon them, how they are all connected to the sacredness of life. And I will elaborate on this in a minute. I will also only use a language that is raw in the feminine, enhance the feminine, call upon the feminine, empower in the right sense of the word, as it is to do with remembrance. So before this, I would like to introduce myself a little and share about the background for this gathering, which is partly was a result of the making of the book, The Return of the Feminine and the World Soul, by Llewellyn Vaughan Lee, who happened to be my husband. The book was created as an offering. I have brought books, and for those who are not familiar with the book, if you wish, it is free for you to take. Also, I have brought a CDs, a talk giving by Llewellyn about this anima mundi and the feminine. And again, if you wish, it is free for you to take. I felt and recognized an urgency to put together all the material that he wrote and spoke about the feminine for the past 10 years. I recognized that the language that he used and spoke was most unlike anything I have read or heard, and it had a real effect. I observed it in others. It opens something in the listener. It affirms and answers something most needed right now. It is true and it is alive, and it has an energy with it. It has a real calling, again, a calling to remember. So when I put it together, I have sent it to many people from all walks of life for endorsements. Some are well known and some are not. For instance, Rachel Naomi Remen or Marianne Woodman. And they were deeply touched by the book, and it was deeply touching back to receive what they wrote and where the place it actually came from them. It was true. It wasn't just somebody do a favor to polite to some person they know. It really came from such a beautiful place. And I also, when I send it out to people, I wanted to send it to people from all walks of life and people I never met before, and I tried my luck. So I looked and I said, I want a baker, because it's to do with life. I want a farmer, it was to do with life. A dancer, a poet, an artist, a well-known woman. And I send it out to life. Just throw it back to life and see what will come back. And it did. And I sent it also to men, and the way I came to those men, I sent it to this farmer, which I watched his documentary on Link TV. His name was Fred Cushman. And he's one of the first organic farmers in America. And he speak to the earth, and he called her she. So I was hooked. So I wrote to him, and he answered me back. And he wrote the beautiful, and then I said, I need a baker. We are about life. It's not about meditating in the mountains and far away. And so I watched again. I love radio. For many years in this country, it's kind of my introducing to this country was through the radio. And his name was, if I remember his right, is Peter Reinhardt. And he's a very well-known baker. He used to be a Franciscan monk. And he became a baker. He's married. He lives in the East Coast. He teaches in university. So I decided, I found his number on the internet, and I called him. And he answered the telephone. And I said to him, you know, and he said, yeah, please send me the book. And he wrote a beautiful, and so it went like that, from different people, from not just from America, different continents. So it became the journey of the book, how we send it out, and how it came back. And it was part of the journey of the making of the book and the calling out. So, okay, so that's about the book and how it came to be and how it kind of slowly created this idea also to bring us together. Now, what I would share here with you is only from my own experience. It is not book knowledge. In my body, there are ancient memories. I remember, and I remember well. And it's also, there is an innate knowledge and knowing of the interconnectedness of all life. Unfortunately, this mind of mine at your service here today is rather a menopausal one. But those memories not affected by it, thank goodness. So, I will also use quotation from few others, who are able to articulate so beautifully what I feel or know or experience far better than myself. By doing so, I also will honor them and their contribution, as they have been so acutely aware of the true need of the feminine already, at least some of them, so many years ago. Some of them, like Helen Luke, he has passed away, I think at the early 90s, and she was a Jungian analyst, an amazing writer. She writes in the most poetical way. She has a great depth of understanding of the feminine from a spiritual point of view. And I wish her writing would be more available to many more women than it is at the moment. She will be more known. Cecil Collins, who was my painting teacher, who also wrote about the woman, and Llewellyn Vaughan Lee, who is more the spring chicken among them, at least by age, and a few others. I will also repeat here some of what I said in the talk I gave in the Global Peace Initiative in India. I'm not a public speaker, and that was the first talk I ever gave, and so for me, it's still the best I can do with some of what I need to say today, because it is about the feminine primordial truth that needs to be remembered. So it's not really, when I thought about it, it's not like I like to trace something new. At the time, I felt the way it came to me then is still so appropriate for today now. So, as we are talking about remembrance, look how life is affirming something. We gather here at Calliopea Foundation, which the name in mythology, Calliope, is the first of the 9 Greek muses. As daughters of Zeus, king of the gods, and the goddess of memory, the muses are symbols of the intuition and faculties of the higher self that call on us to always remember once again. So Thank you, Barbara, Cynthia, for having us all here and preparing the space in such a beautiful way. My name is Anat. I'm a woman, and I'm also a soul. One cannot speak about the feminine without mentioning the soul, as it is the soul that is in us that connects us to the greater reality and the meaning in this life and to each other. It is a great mystery. The feminine mystery of longing belongs to the nature of the soul, which is always feminine before God, or if you like to call it, the divine, beloved, or whatever name you would like to call it, the great mystery. I was born in Israel. As a child and a young woman, I was haunted by a feeling of longing that did not have any explanation in my outer world. I also followed by a feeling of great loneliness. As a child, I always used to speak to nature around me, stones, trees, birds, clouds. I left Israel at the age of 22 to begin a long journey to travel, which ended in London, England, where I met my Sufi teacher, Irina Tweedy. I also met my painting teacher, the British metaphysical painter, Cecil Collins, who was also a mystic, poet and a writer, whose works was concerned with the mystery of life, the landscape of the soul, woman, the real nature of creativity, and few more. I'm married to Llewellyn Vaughan Lee, and we lived in England, but for the past 20 years I have been living in America, as his works has taken him here, where he has found the Golden Sufi Center. I'm a mother of two and a grandmother of two. For many years I have been teaching drawing classes based on the teaching of methods of Cecil Collins, but for the last good many years I have been dedicated all my time and energy working at a center. My work is looking after space, outer and also very much inner. I will explain. In our Sufi meditation group gathering, we practice silent meditation of the heart, and also as part of this ancient tradition, we share dreams, as we believe the dreams hold great importance as guidance. Dreams can tell us about hidden feelings, attitudes, about our repressed shadow qualities, but also they bring messages from the inner world and from the higher self and the soul. Over time, we learn to discriminate which part of ourself the dream comes from. Now, working with dreams also introduces us to a different kind of language, language of images, of rich information from different levels within ourselves that ultimately are striving for wholeness. This involves learning to listen from within. Now, listening from within is one of the great feminine qualities needed when one holds a space. Listening from within is always connected to a sacred space. It is not a rational or intellectual activity. It is born out of silence, and out of that place, if attending correctly and honestly, without wanting for oneself, will bring forth the right language needed to be used and will introduce or will bring forth an atmosphere, which also is a form of knowledge. In our Western culture, we have been mainly exposed and accustomed to process knowledge, scientific knowledge, based upon analysis and separation, exposed to a world that is primordially operated by masculine values. Thus our thoughts and language, maybe without us even noticing, have taken that form, cutting us from the wholeness, which is the natural language of life, the language of the feminine, which is the inner and the outer in relation. Now, working in America, in particular with women, I become aware how barren was the land of the feminine in this country, and how great was the hunger from within for it. Listening from within, holding a space, are both deeply feminine qualities, and I found in my work over the years how unfamiliar and almost foreign was the women in America. A culture so dominated and imposed by masculine values, saturated by outer images, unbelievable materialism, driven by success and money, and enslaved to both. The real nature of the feminine ignored. Pressure on the family is enormous. So to introduce a quality of listening from within was not so an easy one. It took its time to introduce it, to make it familiar, to allow the person to say, to find a way within themselves to go to that place. Not because it wasn't there, but it was buried deep. Now, in order to draw the right attention to the listener, I discovered that I need to use a language in a different way. So it doesn't relate only to the well-known and familiar masculine rational mind, but to our true nature, the being, and to the heart, to the sacred space that is calling us from always. And so when I'm speaking about a language, word, I would like to return to its foundation, origin, purpose of communication, that which relates. And this is the language of the feminine. It is the language of life. The language that connects us to the core, to essence, because it is essence, which is both the center and the circumference. It is a language that always has insight and within it that connection. When something is always remembered, I think, that's my, at least my experience, if somebody remembers you truly, then something is allowed to live according to its nature. It's a language of wholeness. When we truly relate, there is a real presence, and thus the sacred is always present, as a true relating comes from a place that always considers the other. Therefore, there is respect. There is empathy. When there is empathy, a real understanding, the feminine attitude of the heart, there is an unseen presence, sacred space. So a sacred space is a language. There is a great knowledge in atmosphere, and that atmosphere says yes, because sacred space always say yes, if it is to life or to death. And that yes again radiates silently, but not less powerfully, into our being and enhance our capacity to regenerate and to articulate that sacredness again and again, and find that language that allows to connect us to that and to the other, which are really one and the same thing. So we constantly hello that. And if so many of us will do so, can you imagine how beautiful it can be? It doesn't mean that there is no suffering involved. This is a complete myth. And mystics believe that suffering has a great purpose, if taken not from a point of view of a victim, but as a possibility of growth and change. The feminine is also the ancient language of the earth, our ground. The earth is essentially the story of us, of humanity. The words earth and ground are among the oldest in human language. These words are intrinsic to human society. In the Hebrew language, the word earth, men, blood, silence, mother, all come from one root, and I will sound it to you. Now, earth in Hebrew is Adama. Men is Adam. Blood is Dam. Silence is Dmama. Mother is Imma. So every single one of them come from that root. Ma. The first goddess name was Ma. The first taker of life. Ma. It's what the first child says. Ma. We owe a lot to the research of Maria Gimbutas, who traces continuity of sacred earth symbols going back to the earliest human's art. All of those images connected to goddesses and gods were the center of rich religious life. And she said, the primordial deity of our ancestors was female, a self-generating goddess, giver of life and wielder of death. She was the unity of all life in nature. Her power was in water, in stone, in tomb, in cave, in animals, in birds, in snakes, fish, hail, trees, and flowers. She was there for millennia, and she was sacred, because our ancestors understood sacred earth, living earth, Mother Earth. They also understood her as lawgiver. Maria Gambutta said, you cannot deceive earth, ever. Now, I always was interested and felt somehow connected to the Minoan civilizations. The feminine was uniformly honored in that culture and was honored at the center of all cultural life. There is a book called The Search of the Lost Feminine by Craig Barnes. It's very interesting, and I don't know if some of you are familiar with him, how he came to write this book. It's a beautiful book, mainly about the Minoan, the feminine and the women, and the Minoan civilization. He was litigating a case for nurses in a hospital, I think it's in New Mexico, I'm not quite sure. And he was so appalled how the women were treated. It was to do with salaries and so in order to argue his case, he decided to go back and research about the feminine as far back as he knew. And he came with his book, he wrote. So one of the things that he came with is that the Greek myth tell us that one of the names of the air goddess that came from Crete was Semele. Maybe yesterday when you were here with Marguerite, any of you, she maybe have brought this name up. So she was, the word sound interesting in life, like in the Russian language called Zimeli. Semele, Zimeli. This is the word earth in Russian. So according to him, he said, he can't be 100% sure, but he said, he thinks they are connected. So really, from his point of view, then to this day, the goddess Semele had a name that meant simply earth. And if she was from Crete, as the myth uniformly say, then there might have been a Christian earth goddess. Such a conclusion is consistent with common sense. They are two similar words, and Russia is not far from where all this happened, that it might not have picked up the word Zimeli from Semele in some 3,000 years of travel. So in the best case, the name of the woman points towards the fertile earth. But the key notion is that the woman is only the pointer. The earth is the real thing. The earth is what is divine in terms of what comes from that time. So earth, I will use the word earth and soil. It's the same thing. I don't mean the planet Earth. I mean earth and soil as two words interchanging to the same. So earth is the basis of our ancient religion and our civilization. All human communities have a cultural, sensual, and spiritual attachment to the soil. But Western society has lost this attachment because of greed and material prosperity, disconnection from the land, and a scientific culture that has fractured soil and its meaning, and in so doing, put it out of reach of non-scientists' understanding. We are cut at the ankles from the earth, as one woman put it. The earth also is the seen, but also the unseen, which is the sacred darkness and substance, the mother of all where the seeds grow. Again, it is the language of promise, of regeneration, of witnessing and participation. A few years ago in my meditation, I heard the earth cry. It was the most physical experience. I never knew the earth can cry like this. Now I would like to quote from Helen Luke. The instinct of the feminine is precisely to use nothing, but simply to give and receive. This is the nature of the earth, to receive the seed and to nourish it, the roots, to foster growth in the dark so that it may reach up to the light. If we can rediscover in ourselves the hidden beauty of this receptive devotion, if we can learn how to be still without inaction, how to further life without willed purpose, how to serve without demanding prestige, and how to nourish without domination, then we shall be women again, out of whose earth the light may shine. It's very beautiful. And I just like to stress that when I say those things, I'm just in the same boat as everybody else. It's a calling for me too. I'm not saying it because I know it all. I just feel it in my heart. Now I like to quote from Jung. Carl Jung believed the loss of emotional participation in nature has resulted in sense of cosmic and social isolation, which I felt was the fate of us, the feminine, for so long. The sense of isolation was great, and we didn't even know it. And that was a tragedy in a way, because we didn't know that we didn't know. He says, it is not the airy Christian soul that we have lost, but more concrete, the bush soul that links us with the ancestral spirit in nature. Not so long ago, the spirits within nature were still alive and active. Judeo-Christian religion and scientific materialism have contributed to the current negative attitude towards its spiritual dimension. Jung sees the necessity of restoring to nature its original wholeness and considered matter and spirit as equal mysteries. Matter is the tangible exterior of things and spirit the non-visible interior. So speaking about relatedness, what is the relationship between what is sacred space, earth, water, reflection, inner listening, receptivity, longing, vessel, soul, in relation of being a woman? What is that responsibility that is called upon, and what is needed to remember and restored? So once again, I'm drawn to look at what does the word reflection really mean, and what is the real root meaning of the world responsibility and remembrance that we are called for at this time of global crisis and possible transformation in the world and its women. So the image of reflection for me comes first as the image of the surface of water, the source of life. Without, we cannot live. And when clear allows the reflection of whatever is near and above to reflect on it. It is a feminine quality, and it is very mysterious. So by its nature, it connects us to the mystery of life. But one cannot speak of the surface of water without speaking about water itself. As water is the source of life, the resource of life, the agent of regeneration, the foundation of life. If water is contaminated, all creatures would be denied their existence. So one has to return to the core again, to the essence, to that reality on all levels. Now reflections, to quote Helen Luke again, she said, the first thing that strikes me in the word reflection is that's what a mirror is. It reflects back to you. It means really bending back. Also, it means manifest or bring back. You see? Remembering. like water, manifests and always brings back and gives life. Reflection comes from an instinct within us, and it is the only instinct that is solely human. It is that which creates consciousness. In other words, a human being's reflective powers not only separate him from the animal world, they also allow him to look into the depth of the unconscious without being assimilated back into the primal world. Again, reflection implies consciousness. So our first responsibility is the recognition that consciousness is part of the divine life process. In other words, the divine becomes manifest in the human act of reflection. And I will add remembrance. You see, reflection, listening from within, feminine qualities are to do with consciousness. Both, you see, the reflection and even the listening from within are to do with consciousness and the mystery of being human, and also the mystery of creation. A Sufi saying say, I was a hidden treasure, but I wanted to be known, so I have created the world. So now, the word responsibility, which in my opinion has taken a masculine form, what it really means, it's something that we have forgotten its root. It means to promise again. Re or re means again, and spondere means to promise. So to respond, if you really think about it, real response, means to promise again, to regenerate. When you really are listening from within, you respond. Something of your being, all of you respond. And the moment you do that, it's like regeneration. Very feminine quality. So to respond, to promise again, to make anew. So it is the remembrance of the original yes to life, to creation, to your ultimate purpose, your sacred, most necessary task. So the word reflection in its true meaning, and responsibility in its true meaning, and remembrance is the yes in creation. And how I connect it into being a woman, you see? Remember and promise. A woman is a constant promise, as she is a vessel of return. Without the feminine, nothing can be born. So you can see how this innate instinct of reflection, of the purpose of creation, that natural consciousness, the yes, that is feminine sacredness, it's the consciousness of life itself, that is what needs to be restored. And I would like to quote from the book of Llewellyn, the feminine, whether the feminine quality or woman themselves, holds a secret of creation, which is the light hidden in matter. This is very important to understand, that if one is to do any real spiritual work at this time of global and ecological crisis, one has to realize that the feminine holds this unique understanding of the sacredness in matter, and also how we need to reawaken this aspect in life. My teacher used to say, woman is like gold. Whatever happens to her, she is like gold. If you put gold in a latrine, it still remains gold, and you throw it in the dirt, and not dirt, earth, because I will never call earth dirt. When I came first to America and people used to call the earth dirt, it was like somebody, you know, caressing the cat in the wrong way, and I used to get so upset. Because I used to say, how can you call it dirt? This is earth. Because the association, you see, if you call the earth dirt, what dirt? What is the next association to dirt? Dirty. Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So you see, the dirt, earth, mother of all, is just something to trodden upon, with no 1 ounce of remembrance when you do that. So my teacher used to say, woman is like gold. Whatever happens to her, she's like gold. This sounds rather simplistic, but it is an eternal truth. See, I can feel you ladies. Oh yes, there's gold, right. I feel it. There's a different suddenly movement silently inside of you. So this may sound rather simplistic, but it is an eternal truth. And truth is a simple essence. The Sufi says, the woman will never get old, otherwise creation will die. Women have this magical substance in their being that has to do with the real mystery of creation. As only woman can give birth to a human being, can bring the light of a divine soul into the world, the creative energy of yes. And thus, all creativity is to do with the relationship with life and with each other. It is not a product that can be rationalized. It is about the mystery of being. Now I would like to give you a little bit other quote from The Lost Feminine, because it carries certain images that I think it's helpful to be with. And he says, the way women is depicted in the Minoan civilization, the images that show up most often are birds, bees, snakes, women, trees, and wheat. The images shared two features. First, they're all alive. Second, they all have a way in which they bring about a signal rebirth or return. Birds, bees, snakes, leaves, and wheat go away in the winter and return in the spring. That leaves only women, who do not go away in winter, but women's fertility goes away every month and returns every month. The children are the mark of human return, endlessly over time. So women are vessels of return. You see the word vessel, which is the equivalent of what wheat, trees, snakes, and or swallows do in spring. They are the agent of human continuation, or that is, if there is anything close to spring in the human experience, it's a woman who is the agents of endless return. So the image of women are not just to do with fertility, it's also to do with return. And that's what Maria Gumbitus said also. It's not about fertility, it's about return. You see the difference? You see, we are so concerned with progress and achievement. It is a linear activity, but we forget that the natural progress in life is really to do with wholeness. And wholeness is also to do with return. That is a great difference, because it concerns with life, not the abuse of it, but its recognition of it and from the depths of depths. Again, I will quote from The Search of the Feminine. Because we speak about linear activity, I mean, in our present time, we are ruled by time, and time is linear, is ruled by masculine values. In ancient time, in the Minoan time, time was a circle, cyclical, not linear as it is now. The cyclical was using the sun and the moon, or wheat, and woman, and trees as a model of the operation of the cosmos. Today in the West, we do not imagine time as circular. There would be no idea of progress in circle. And we value progress so highly in this civilization, in this Western civilization. We base our lives, our economy, our politics upon the idea of progress, and therefore precisely the opposite idea, that time is a line. Linear thinking leads naturally to the idea of progress, but circular thinking does not. In the Minoan culture, always was an evident anticipation of rebirth. That's what you lived upon. Even when the people die, it was rebirth. That was the anticipation. That was the way of life. Time goes round. Life goes round. And death is not an ending, but a stage in a continuation. So, in relation to that, I would like to quote Helen Gluck again. You see, I do this quote because there's no way I could articulate it so clearly and beautifully how those people write it. And she wrote it over 30 or 40 years ago. And she wrote, "Whether a woman is efficient or brilliant in sphere deemed masculine, or whether she remain in a traditionally feminine role, she must discriminate and relate to the image of the spirit, while at the same time maintaining her roots in basic feminine nature, that which receives, nourish, give birth on all levels," because not every woman physically give birth, but has the capacity to do it in other ways, "give birth on all levels of being through her awareness of the earth and her ability to bring up the water of life from under the earth, and all her true creativeness spring from this." So you can see how all those words, earth, water, inner listening, sacred space, are completely intrinsically related with non-stop, the one from the other, from the other, from the other. For me, you know, I'm thinking of an image for myself. It's like I always have this image, you know, when you throw a stone in a pond, and you see how the rings, immediately the rings start to manifest, many, many rings, and then they become a big ring, and they all merge into one. So it's like in that moment, it's all one. It's like your breath. And she also says, "It is time for women to turn from this hidden contempt for the feminine values, so that she may cease to identify creativity solely with the production of thought and with achievement in the outer world. It is exceedingly hard for us to realize in the climate of Western society that the woman who quietly responds with intense interest and love to people, to ideas, and to things is as deeply and truly creative as one who always seeks to lead, to act, to achieve. The feminine qualities of receptivity, of nurturing in silence and secrecy are, whether in men or in women, as essential to creation as the masculine opposite and in no way inferior." I don't know if you remember, but I remember there was a time to say you are a housewife wasn't a very kind of nice thing to say. You have to have a title. You have to do things. You have to be to university. Which is nothing wrong with it. But to say a housewife, I remember, wasn't something you have to kind of apologize to yourself to say that. Now, I chose all those quotes because I feel they give something back to us women. Because the words that she uses, it gives back. It reminds us of something. It scratched the surface to go deeper. So I'm going to quote again from her, if you don't mind. And she said, very important things that we all forgot. "The biological difference between men and women is never and nothing but. It is a fundamental difference. It implies a fundamental difference of psychic nature. No matter how consciously we may develop the contrasexual principle within us, no matter how strong our intuition or the ultimate union between the masculine and the feminine element in each individual, Yet, as long as we remain in our bodies, here in space and time, we are predominantly either male or female. And we forget this at our peril. Disaster awaits a woman who imitates men, but even a woman who aims to be half and half and believe that she is achieving archetypal androgyny will certainly be inferior on both counts. A woman is born to be essentially and wholly a woman, and the more deeply and consciously she is able to know and live the spirit, the logos within her, the more surely she will realize this truth. And she also wrote 40 years ago, "For that can be no doubt, that if civilized humankind is to survive the danger of this century of transition," and that was already 40 years ago she came with that, "when all the familiar landmarks are disappearing and the collective structures that used to protect us are crumbling, we must turn to the goddess, to the long despised values of the feminine, to the feeling heart and contemplative mind. Perhaps then our culture may see the rising of a new day." Why? Because the feminine holds the mystery of creation. And so I would like to quote from the book, The Return of the Feminine. And it says, "We have to realize that when we deny the divine mystery of the feminine, we also deny something fundamental to life itself. We separate life from its sacred core, from the matrix that nourishes all creation. We cut ourselves from the source that alone can heal, nourishes, and transform." You see, return is also about transformation. The same sacred source that gave birth to each of us is needed to give meaning to our life, to nourish it with what is real, and to reveal of us the mystery, the purpose of being alive. Because humanity has a central function in the whole of creation, what we deny ourselves, we deny to all life. In denying the feminine has sacred power and purpose, we have impoverished life on a personal and global levels in way we do not really even begin to understand. Yes, we see now the outer effects on the earth, but it is so much more difficult to recognize the inner effects, which have been devastating. At this time, we need to reclaim what has been denied, what has been abandoned in the pursuit of materialistic dreams. We need to return to the core of our being, to where the sacred comes into existence. And the feminine holds the key to this work of redemption and transformation. Women have to recognize their true spiritual nature and the transformative potential they carry within them, so they can offer it back to life. For without it, the world will slowly die. The world needs the presence of women who are awake to their spiritual light, who can do work with the substance of life in order to heal and transform. The last era has created a separation between matter and spirit, and so matter has forgotten its sacred nature, its ability to transform. There are many different qualities of feminine wisdom, from the understanding of the healing power of herbs to the deep-lived knowledge of the feminine nature of the soul relationship with God, the soul's true state of receptivity to the divine. So many of these qualities have been lost. So many priestesses have been killed, wise women burnt. And yet, the real wisdom remained because it belonged to life itself. In the cells and in the soul of every woman, this ancient knowing is awaiting to awaken, so that once again the sacred feminine can make her contribution can help the world come alive with love and joy. So woman has to remember who she is, to reclaim who she is, and by doing so, again reclaim midwife, the reawakening of the spiritual understanding of life. And I am reminded of what Mother Teresa said. We do not serve the world because it is broken, but because it is holy. And it just for one more thing that I want to speak about is longing. As I mentioned earlier, the feminine mystery of longing belongs to the nature of the soul, which is always feminine before God, the divine, the beloved, or whatever name you would like to call it. And I quote again from Llewellyn Vaughan Lee. It's not from the book, it's from another article he wrote. Longing and devotion are feminine qualities and also belong to the heart. Our culture has forgotten and buried the doorways of devotion and left us stranded, not even knowing the real nature and purpose of the longing that tugs at our heart. It is easy to think that this discontent of the soul is a psychological problem, or to mistake longing for depression, or identify it as a mother complex, or a result of an unhappy marriage. We need to reclaim the sanctity of sadness and the meaning of the heart's tears. From within the heart, the oneness of love becomes life's deepest wonder. For as in the words of Hildegard von Bingen, it is the heart that sees the primordial eternity of every creature. And Helen Luke says again, the promise of the dawn is already visible in the yearning of so many people for the restoration of meaning in their life. If enough individuals consciously attend and watch, which are feminine qualities, in those magical moments when both dark and light are present together in the twilight, then indeed the sun will rise on a new era. The Pueblo Indians believed that the actual physical sun would never rise again for them, and for the white men too, if they were not there in the dawn to greet it. It is a scientific nonsense, but a profound and unchanging inner truth. I'd like to end with my favorite saying, which I heard from an Aboriginal elder, who says, you see, remember, everything is a mystery. But when it stopped being a mystery, it stopped being true.